Syndicate TTR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again. I cannot tell you guys how happy I am to be part of the Truth Frequency family and to have the best listeners in the world out there. Already 12 people in the chat room, which I know pales in comparison to the evening crowd, but for a morning session of a daily dose of deprogramming, that is a big number for us, and I'm really, really glad that all of you guys could tune in this morning. It's going to be a fantastic show, got to tell you right off the bat. Before we get into all that, I'll let you know, my name's JD, just so in case you guys are curious, that's my name. We are live right now. We do this every day, Monday through Friday, and today is the 25th day of March. It is Wednesday. I can't believe how quickly March is scooting by. It's absolutely crazy town. Trying to check out what's going on in the chat room as well. Man, just can't tell you guys how much I appreciate all of you in there. Okay, so 25th of March, it's Wednesday, means nothing. It's a hump day. I don't know. It's a crux of the week, whatever you want to call it. We're going to get through it together, though. Clint Richardson, back by very popular demand. Last time he was on the show, he, of course, is the steward of the website, The Corporation Nation, and we're talking about sovereignty, legality versus lawfulness, all of the subjects that we really, really like around here, especially at Truth Frequency, kind of following suit with what Roger Sales' new show is doing, which immediately follows mine. So if you guys are interested in topics like this, man, Roger's show would be a great place to go for that. But Clint Richardson will be on today, and I completely dropped the ball last time he was on the show because he's actually an expert in something that ties into all of this, another piece of the puzzle, as it were, and I forgot to mention it last time. So we're going to spend some time talking about the CAFRs, C-A-F-R, which are apparently the corporate government or the municipal corporations audit reports that come out every single year. So really interesting, specific stuff to be involved with, but I want to find out everything I can about that. Obviously, we'll talk about, the straw man stuff, and, we'll just kind of continue with the conversation that we had last time. He's a very, very, very interesting guy, very smart. Definitely looking forward to having him back on the program. Deborah Tavares is going to be here tomorrow. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things, Agenda 21, probably really similar to the stuff that Clint is talking about today. Clint just did a really great, video presentation. That's the word I'm looking for. Really good presentation about Common Core and Agenda 21. Obviously, all of the kinds of topics that we talk about here on the Red Pill Reports very often. But he did that, and that is up at his website, which again is the Corporation Nation. So we'll probably be talking about a lot of similar things with him as with Deborah Tavares. And then Friday is going to be a fantastically awesome show because L.A. Marzulli is going to be on, and there's never a shortage of fascinating things to talk about with L.A. Marzulli. I've got to say that. Also, I owe everybody an apology. I do. I'm not going to take all the heat for it, but I will take some of the heat. And this is one of the things I love / hate about Truth Frequency Radio and some of the other hosts. The other hosts on this network are amazing, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, really seriously, people like Kev and Marty on Kev Baker's show, Joe Joseph's show, Popeye's show, Aaron and Mel. These guys, they put together really, really fantastic stuff. But they're better than I am. And that's really, I'm not trying to blow smoke up anybody's, but I gave you guys some details yesterday regarding this plane crash right when it happened. And it turns out that as the day goes on, the details changed and we got much better information from, Kevin Marty last night. So, first of all, I like to give kudos where kudos is due. And second of all, I just want to say how much I love being part of a team like TFR because of this constant evolution of the news cycle as the day goes on during the day. You know, I'll get an article in the morning, we'll go over some kind of incident that happened, we'll speculate a little bit on it, and then we'll move on. And then later on in the day, as more details come out, some of these other hosts who are awesome will look at the stuff and say, hey, you know, let's poke into this a little bit more. Has anybody thought about this? Or if the details change, they're going to get you guys up to date. You're not going to find that anyplace else. You're not going to find that in another network where hosts work like that with one another. And so I'm just really thrilled to be able to be corrected by hosts that are better than myself. And that's definitely what happened yesterday in regard to this plane crash that went down in the French Alps. So one of the things that I gotta mention, when we did this article yesterday, I want to kind of blame the New York Times on this, because the initial reports suggested that the pilots said Mayday like three times, right? That they were actually in communication with the tower. They communicated that they were going through some kind of unusual condition or something like that, right? That's what my report said. So that's what I told all of you poor people out there. And then I'm listening to Kevin's show, and he's saying there was no Mayday, no nothing. 8 minutes of total silence as this plane descended, and I'm thinking, oh, I can't be right. I got to go look this stuff up. So I've got 19 articles up in front of me, all of which corroborate the new details that have come out now, which Kevin and Marty were just completely on top of yesterday, that there were no Maydays given, that there was no communication at all between the flight crew and the towers there in Marseille. So we kind of talked a little bit about the speculative nature of this event. And I gotta say, Kevin and Marty, although I don't necessarily, I'm not gonna throw my hat into the ring and completely believe in this theory yet, but there are some more corroborating details that are coming out. They kind of suggested yesterday that perhaps the downing of this aircraft could have been related to CERN, all right? Which I know it's a little early in the week for us to kind of go off into that tangent, but decided to do a little snooping. 320 kilometers away from the CERN facility is where this plane crash went down. So for those of you guys in the United States that don't know the metric system, a kilometer is roughly the equivalent of about 17 feet, I think. Something like that. It's not very big, I don't think. So literally, you know, on the doorstep, potentially, of the CERN facility. When we get over into the tech and science news later today, there's been another report that's come out of CERN that says they blew some kind of circuit, and they're going to be down for potentially days, if not weeks. Interesting timing that report just came out yesterday. They blew some kind of electrical circuit, had an electrical short, something like that. Could they have blown something yanking an airplane out of the sky? I don't know. But, okay, here's what I do know. I'm looking at the crash site pictures that have now come out. Finally, we're getting some details. I mean, again, there's a lot of news coverage on this right now. And I'm looking at the crash site pictures, and a couple of things are kind of striking me as unusual. First of all, I don't see an impact site. There's no impact site. There's not like a crater that's smoldering at the bottom or whatever. So, okay, maybe this potential plane just went down straight into the face of the mountain. The other thing that strikes me as unusual is that all of the material left from the plane is very, very small. I mean, it looks like it was pulverized. And again, if the plane went into the mountain at 400 miles an hour, granted, that's probably what would happen. But when you look at the pictures of the wreckage, it's basically all laid out on the side of a hill where you can see some pretty significant water erosion. There's some gullies, you know, it's a pretty inhospitable type of area. But all of the material from the planes has gathered into these gullies at the bottom, right? So you see the face of this hill or mountain, I call it a bluff, I guess, because it's kind of the foothill area, with striations in it from this erosion. But all of the material from this plane crash seemed to have gathered down into the depths of these gullies, all the way around the entire scene. You don't see any place where up on top of the hills there's bits and pieces of the plane. So right away I thought, okay, well, that looks unusual because it looks like all of this material was carried by water into these gullies. But one of the details that I gave yesterday that actually did hold water and still stood, into the evening sessions last night, was that the sky was clear, that there was no rain. There's hardly any wind. Sky was completely clear. And so, you know, what happened to this, material that it all got pushed into these gullies the way it did? It just seems really unusual to me. And that on top of the fact that there's no, Okay, and then Red, yeah, that was another point that I was going to get to. People in the chat room, man, we have the best listeners in the world, I swear to God. Picking up the fact that there were now witnesses saying that there were bits and pieces of this airplane falling from the sky, right? And one of the witnesses I thought was really interesting because he lives right in this area. He's actually the owner of the camp area. There's a family camping area there near where this airline went down. And he says that they oftentimes have military aircraft tooling around in the area. So I can recognize that, or I can relate to that, because here in the Ozarks, if you hear a jet going around, you run outside, because the A-10 Warthog guys fly around our area because we've got all these really cool, I guess you want to call them canyons, that are the rivers kind of go into canyon areas. And anytime you hear one, you can run outside and you already know that there's going to be another one, because they always travel in pairs and they travel really low to the ground. So they're easy to hear. By low to the ground, I mean, you can read the pilot's name off his name tag kind of low. Scary stuff. But anyway, it's fascinating. So anytime you hear something like that, you run outside. And one of the witnesses that was saying that he saw these bits and pieces of the airplane falling down, he also heard some unusual noises. One of them lasted for about a minute. For about 8 minutes, and one of them lasted for about another 30 seconds after that. And he ran outside thinking that it was fighter jets, but he didn't see any fighter jets. So, here's somebody who would definitely recognize unusual noises in his vicinity and is already kind of keyed into what the normal sound of aircraft and fighter aircraft, and thought he heard exactly that and ran outside. So there's just more coming out about this story than we had yesterday. So I just kind of wanted to keep you guys up to date. They have found the black boxes. I want to make sure I get this correct. The German Civil Aviation Department has confirmed that there is conversation on the black box. They haven't said what the nature of the conversation was between the pilots, but they have verified that there is, in fact, something on this recording. What will also be interesting to find out, or to see in this particular incident, is how quickly we get information from the black box. Because remember, we're all still waiting on the black box from MH17 right now. So that's been months and months and months. How interesting is it that we've already got Flight Recorder and verified, at least verified, that there is information on it? I don't know. I find this all to be very circumspect at this point. Let's see if there's anything else. Well, one of the other big kind of red flags in my mind that popped up yesterday, there were a whole bunch of news anchors, people on mainstream media, that were already suggesting that this potentially could have been a result of hacking, okay? And I think pretty definitively at this point that's what happened to MH370. I don't think there's a lot of speculation about that anymore. But I didn't know anything about the Airbus flights, whether or not that was even capable. And it's just interesting to me that these guys would go. One of them was a former commercial pilot. His name's Jay Rollins, and he says, this situation's very similar to what happened when the U.S. lost that drone over Iran. Interesting that we're bringing Iran into the picture so suddenly also. And he said the same thing. Suddenly the aircraft was responding to outside forces. And he says, and if something like that were going on, it would be very disturbing to the pilots. He says, I think we'll learn a lot with the black boxes, because we need to know what these people were seeing in the cockpits, since we can't hear what they were thinking otherwise. But he says he believes that the plane's descent was worrisome because it makes him think that hacking or some sort of interference to the computer system was potential here. Interesting just to me that a pilot would come out. So, of course, I had to go run over to Wiki and try and figure out what kind of redundancy features, because one of the things that these guys go on to say as they're talking about the mechanical nature or the potential hacking of these planes was that they weren't sure if there was any type of mechanical override system or a hydraulic override system in the event that they were to lose power or lose control of their fly-by-wire systems. Also, I was curious because we're talking about an aircraft that's 24 years old, and we just don't know really what's going on. So hopping over to the Wiki, because obviously Wiki is the most accurate thing in the world, but they do say here, Airbus and Boeing commercial airplanes differ in their approaches to using the fly-by-wire systems, and this Airbus 320 does in fact have the fly-by-wire systems, which is what the 777 MH370 also had a similar fly-by-wire system, which is where I think the major problem happened here. So the one point that I wanted to point out was that the A320 specifically does have a mechanical backup system for its pitch, trim, and rudder. Obviously, the engines could be shut down manually as well. So it kind of lends credence to the fact that these pilots were going through some kind of unusual situation, and perhaps that's why, according to the latest articles, they didn't actually reach out to the flight crew or the flight control people in Marseille, because they were trying to wrestle control of their aircraft. But, you know, again, the crash scene itself kind of makes me wonder what's going on. The fact that you don't see much of an actual impact site, just kind of makes me curious. I don't know. But again, Kev Baker and Marty yesterday's show, if you didn't hear it, man, they really fleshed this stuff out and they got my wheels spinning. And that's why I like this network so much, because everybody brings their own little piece of the puzzle and a little bit of conjecture to it. And before you know it, you're off in crazy land. And I love that about this. So anyway, let's get away from the aircraft downing. Obviously, you know, it's still a tragic, tragic incident. 150 people, 146 people on the plane plus six crew members passing away. Just absolutely tragic. And hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it once we find out more from the black boxes. We've got a situation of spy versus spy going on right now with the United States and Israel and the Congress. All of this whole three-way craziness that's going on in the Congress right now, especially, you know, between Israel and the United States and Barack Obama, kind of hit another high mark yesterday when it turns out that Barack Obama was actually spying on Iran, and then it turns out then in the process of spying on Iran, he realized that Iran was actually spying on Barack Obama and the whole Iranian, the talks that are taking place over this Iranian nuclear armament, resolution that everybody's working on. So Israel was essentially spying on that whole operation and then subsequently feeding information back to specific members in the Congress to try and undermine the entire operation. So it's just more ridiculousness. We're spying on them and find out they're spying on us and then feeding that information back. Now, that's granted not necessarily an unusual activity. That's pretty standard in terms of operating procedure. But what's unusual about this one is the fact that they were feeding this information back to the United States Congress people in an effort to try and derail these negotiations as we're going on. That's kind of a high watermark in terms of spy versus spy type stuff. It obviously shows that the situation, in terms of our relationship with Israel right now, is kind of reaching this climactic point where everybody is standing in a big circle pointing fingers at each other, and you just kind of have to wonder what's going to go down next. And then, of course, you've got Iran in the background trying to figure out what they're going to do with their country. And, man, I'll tell you what, this is kind of another article, more of the same in terms of what's going on between Netanyahu and Obama and all this back and forth spying, so we'll skip over that. Also, in relation to Iran right now, it's always nice when they come out and they say, hey, we're doing this, but it has nothing to do with those circumstances. These are always my favorite articles of the day. But when we get over into the science and tech news, no, when we get over to the American side of news, I'll get into this story, but just Monday, we decided to go ahead and launch an intercontinental ballistic nuclear missile just for the fun of it, just to show that we can do it. It doesn't actually have a warhead on it. It has some sort of test reentry device or something like that. But, you know, in a big show of fire and beauty and wonder, we basically launched one of those missiles off just because America. So anyway, following that visual to the world message last night by the test firing of the ICBM, America appears now to be shifting to the big stick diplomacy. Now, following Iran's naval drills last week, which of course we have to remember they were attacking a replica of a U.S. aircraft carrier, Sputnik News reported now that as the nuclear negotiations between Iran and the P5+1 nations are coming to a head, the U.S. begins Eagle Resolve, which is a massive military exercise in the Persian Gulf. Eagle Resolve will involve tactical exercises from the U.S. Army, the Marines, and various other military branches, with simulated portions of the exercises based on a fictional adversary. Anybody want to lay a bet on who the fictional adversary is going to be in this one? Okay, so careful to ensure Obama does not lose his Nobel Peace Prize, the CENTCOM officials explained again, just want to reiterate here, that this exercise is not intended as a signal to Iran. It has nothing to do with Iran, nothing to see here. We're not moving an entire contingent of, military forces, army, navy, and et cetera into the region for, you know, has nothing to do with you guys. Just carry on what you're doing. Anyway, Sputnik goes on. He says, with the support of regional allies, the U.S. moved nearly 3,000 military personnel as well as air, land, sea, and special operations components into the Gulf, taking place just off the coast of Kuwait. The exercises will continue through the end of the month and is meant to improve the military's response should an incident occur in the region. Also, it will make a very convenient staging point for us to drop off more weapons inside of Yemen for whoever is in charge of that country next week. Just saying, you know, while we're there, probably offload a whole bunch of material to those people. Anyway, just wanted to point out again, it's kind of hard to ignore the fact that we're fighting some fictitional adversary in the front yard of Iran, while at the same time all these nuclear resolution exposures are coming out. So also, staying in the same region here, the White House said yesterday that the United States will keep its current complement of 9,800 troops in Afghanistan through the end of 2015. Of course, this is instead of cutting the number by about half as originally planned. So in a joint statement with Afghanistan issued during a day of meetings with the Afghanistan president, Ghani, the White House said the size of the U.S. troop presence in 2016 will be decided later this year. So again, not only have we backpedaled away from halving the amount of troops that we have in Afghanistan by the end of the year, we've completely curtailed that. And now we're pushing off until next year, even the conversation that we're going to have about whether or not troop presence will remain through 2016. Spoiler alert, it will. Look over at what's going on in Yemen right now. If you don't see a drive there for the United States to try and spread freedom, recontrol the region, whatever you want to call it, whatever the flash word is going to be this week, that's what's going to happen in terms of Yemen, and we're going to obviously need a base of operations. And, look who's right there with military bases and already has 10,000 troops there. Again, original plan was to cut 9,800 troops all the way down to 5,500 by the end of this year, but Ghani, the president of Afghanistan, asked Obama to slow the withdrawal of U.S. troops from his country because Afghan security forces are bracing for a tough spring fighting season and are also contending with Islamic State fighters looking to recruit on their soil. So, less negativer troops. That's what I'm looking for. Less negativer troops in Afghanistan. That's what's going on right now. Also, this story crossed my radar the other day, and not the other day, but yesterday, and I really kind of took me back a little bit because I hadn't actually put these two puzzle pieces together in my head, and maybe you guys haven't either. But we're talking about glyphosate, the number one ingredient of Roundup and a wonderful brainchild of the Monsanto Corporation. So altruistic, those people over there. But there's been a lot of reports lately talking about glyphosate causing cancer and how it's, essentially really, really, really bad. Okay. But the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is a French-based research arm of the World Health Organization, has now reclassified the herbicide glyphosate as a result of what it says is convincing evidence, again, that the chemical produces cancer in lab animals, and more limited findings, it causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in humans. So glyphosate-containing herbicide Roundup made by Monsanto is a mainstay of industrial agriculture. But this has got much, much larger and global implications. I had no idea that this product, Roundup, was what the United States is using in their aerial spraying program over Colombia in an effort to fight against the drug war, or in the drug war, right? This fumigation program, which is financed by the U.S. and partly carried out by American contractors, has sprayed 4 million acres of land in the last two decades to kill cocoa plants, obviously because their leaves are used to produce cocaine. But Colombia's left likens this program to the U.S. military's use of Agent Orange herbicide during the Vietnam War. And I kind of agree with that. In 2013, Colombia agreed to pay Ecuador the paltry sum of $15 million to settle a lawsuit over economic and human damage tied to spraying along its country's borders. The U.S. government even stated that damage to the environment and health risks from production of cocaine far outweigh the adverse effects of aerial eradication. So that's the angle that the United States is hanging its hat on. It's saying, the environmental damage and health risks from cocaine itself is far more damaging than the United States contractors spraying 4 million acres of Colombian, sovereign country with cancer-causing chemicals, right? And the spraying program is still going on right now, right? Let's talk about tobacco for just a second. United States is the fourth largest producer of tobacco in the world, right? More than 100 million people die from tobacco every single year. How many people died of cocaine? Just asking. I don't think it's 100 million. I'm pretty sure it's not, actually. I don't have the number in front of me, but probably not 100 million. So by that matrix or by that metric, Colombia really should get in their airplanes and come over here and start spraying all of our tobacco fields, because obviously the damage to health and environment caused by tobacco smoking far outweighs the damage that would be done to the American people if we were just randomly being sprayed from the sky by contractors from another country, right? That seems totally fair, and that would, and obviously the right-wing idiots in Washington would totally believe that. They'd be like, oh yeah, it's obvious, you know, tobacco is really bad. So there you go. But again, this is going to come back to bite us in the butt here, ladies and gentlemen. And the fact that it's still going on right now, we're fighting this draconian, ridiculous law or war against drugs, it's just stupid, especially given the fact that the CIA is who brings most of the drugs into the country. And that's how they got most of their money. Probably a $600 billion industry. Anyway, this is just another global situation that people are not paying attention to. And the fact that we are over there spraying a sovereign country, based on this lie about the danger of drug use. And I'm not saying everybody should go out and use drugs. I'm not saying that at all. But, I do think that one of the mainstays of our country is liberty and sovereignty, and respecting the sovereignty of another nation seems like that should be a principle that we adhere to. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm old fashioned. I don't think I'm that old. But it seems like we're supposed to be respecting liberty. Remember, liberty was actually the foundation of our country, not democracy, not, you know, the freedom to stand in line to get a bunch of orange goop at the Orange Julius at the mall. That's not what this is about. This is about liberty. That's what we're supposed to be taking out from our country and expressing to the world, and flying over some other sovereign country and spraying their lands with chemicals that cause cancer. More depressing stuff. Anyway, that's what's going on there down in Colombia. really flies in the face of old Jen Psaki saying that we've got this supposed long-standing policy of non-intervention in the Central and South America, unless you consider spraying 4 million acres with poisonous carcinogenic chemicals. Oh well. Profit over people. That's the answer. Okay guys, 3 minute break. We're gonna come back. I got more cheery stuff on the other side, I promise. We got a lot of good news. We'll look at tech stuff to cover. Be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark. As ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky, and you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to My Patriot Supply. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States?
rights and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant. People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
This is London calling on Longwave.
The Chris Everard Show. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break, and thank all of you guys hanging out in the chat room. Holy cow, full crowd in the chat room today. Man, it's good to have you guys along. I love the format, love having you guys in there able to chat with one another and to give me questions. I do my best to try and keep on top of questions that you guys have about news and things like that, and also to bring questions over to the guest when we bring them on. Just as a reminder, Clint Richardson will be joining us from the Corporation Nation today. We're going to be having all kinds of interesting discussion about some of, I know, your favorite topics out there, the sovereign movement, straw man redemption, things like that. We'll also talk about the corporate nation, the corporate nature of the municipal governments, all of our cities and counties and things like that. Before I get back into the news, though, I do have to give a little announcement today. I totally forgot to do this when my early ramble here. But later on today, I will be on the Joe Joseph Show. I am so excited about this. I cannot tell you guys how much I'm looking forward to getting a chance to actually chat with Joe live on the air. I have no idea what we're going to talk about. He hasn't told me yet, but it's going to be awesome regardless. He's one of the best hosts. One of the thing, you know, what's one of the things I really like about TFR is that each host has their own unique perspective that they bring to the table. And, Joe is certainly not an exception to that rule, man. He is absolutely, spot on with just about everything that he says. And what I like though is that he's very open-minded to other ideas, and he's not afraid to really kind of push the envelope some. So I'm really looking forward to being on that show. And I would remind you guys all to tune in to the Joe Joseph Show today, but I know that I don't have to, because I know that you guys are already going to be tuned in for the Kev Baker Show, which happens before Joe Joseph Show, because A, Kev Baker Show is freaking awesome, and B, Rebecca Roth is going to be on Kev Baker Show today. Rebecca Roth is the author of Methodical Illusion. We had her on, I want to say like 2 weeks ago, talking about, I mean, she honestly, ladies and gentlemen, she is a ex-flight attendant, a long-time flight attendant, and has looked into information on 9/11 from a perspective that most people don't have, and she is probably right up there in the upper echelon of authorities on 9/11 at this point. And I'll be perfectly honest, Kevin Marty are both much better at doing interviews than I am. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they are able to pull some new information out of Rebecca, because I know she's got new information to share today. So I know all of you guys will be tuning in for that show. And then again, immediately after that, Joe Joseph Show, I will be a guest today. So who knows what's going to happen then, but I think it'll be a good time. And I'm really, really honored to be invited over to his program today. So appreciate you guys all tuning in for all of that. I think, again, the Rebecca Roth interview today is just going to be awesome. We're talking about a major, major awesome day on TFR, and hope you guys are excited to be a part of it. I'm excited to be a part of it. Speaking of things I'm excited to be a part of, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about a little national news, and this is good stuff here. Representative Mark Pocan, who is a Democrat from Wisconsin, and Representative Thomas Massie, who is a Republican from Kentucky, they have introduced a bill called the Surveillance State Repeal Act. And it would end, once and for all, the NSA's unconstitutional domestic spying. And we can actually say this time without hesitation. This is not a watered-down piece of crap bill. This is actually a bill that does stand to actually do something against the Patriot Act. And so I want everybody to try and get involved with this one. This is one that we've actually got to support. So, again, Congress has introduced a handful of NSA reform bills over the last few years due to public disapproval of NSA spying. There's obviously significant political pressure to do something about it. But most of these reform bills, however, would do practically anything or not anything at all, really, to rein in warrantless spying. So civil liberties experts say that most of these bills contain loopholes that will allow or continue to allow these invasive practices to continue. And that's why it's so refreshing to see a bill like this one. Again, the Surveillance State Repeal Act. It is very bold and it is very effective. And specifically, these are the things that this bill is looking to do. It would repeal the Patriot Act, which in itself contains the provisions that allow for the bulk collection of metadata from U.S. citizens. It would also repeal the FISA Amendment Act, which contains provisions allowing for the government to monitor emails. It would expand judges' terms on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and technical and legal experts to advise on technical issues raised during proceedings. It would mandate that the Government Accountability Office regularly monitor such domestic surveillance programs for compliance with the law and also to issue an annual report. It will ban the federal government from mandating the manufacturer of an electronic device must install spyware, which is something they do now. I agree, Truth. Someone in the chat room saying they're never going to give this stuff up and blah, blah, blah. And I totally agree with you, Truth. I think you're probably right that they're not going to give this stuff up. But what I do like about it is that we have actual elected representatives who are having the conversation. And that is important to note. The fact that these people who are, even if it's just on the surface and it's never going to pass, the fact that it's being put into the national conversation is an important development in our ongoing fight against the Patriot Act. So regardless of whether or not this bill actually goes anywhere, the fact that it's being proposed and the fact that it actually does have teeth to it, and that if it were passed, it would actually do what we wanted it to do. That to me has merit and it's worth looking into. But I agree with everything else that you're saying there, sir. Again, though, this one would also say that no information related to a U.S. person may be acquired without a valid warrant based on probable cause. And this includes the Executive Order 12333. It also retains tools that are useful to law enforcement, such as not requiring a new warrant if a suspect switches devices in an attempt to break surveillance. So you can see they're kind of, they got to play to both sides here. They got to play to both sides, make sure everybody's a little bit happy and getting a little bit of what they want. But, you know, I could really get behind a national repeal of the Patriot Act. I mean, that's something that we all need to be talking about and working towards, in my opinion. So there you go. Wanted to get back on the story of the intercontinental ballistic missile fired early Monday from a facility in California, according to the U.S. Air Force. They said the tests were a message to the world about Washington's nuclear capabilities. The Minuteman III missile was fitted with a re-entry vehicle of a testing nature instead of a live thermonuclear warhead, thank goodness, and was test launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California at 3:36 in the morning time, according to the Air Force statement there. And they go on to say that with these launches, we not only verify our processes and the ICBM weapon system, we provide a visual to the world that the Minuteman III is capable of striking pretty much anywhere with extreme precision. This is, of course, one of the spokesmen from the 90th Missile Wing there, based out of Francis East Warren Air Force Base in Wyoming. The Mighty 90 is one of the U.S. Air Force's three missile wing commands, and the other two are at the 91st at Minot in North Dakota and 341st at Malmstrom in Montana, and there are roughly 450 ICBMs between all three of them. But worth checking out the video. I got to tell you, it is pretty impressive, and if you're, I don't know, man, if I was living close to one of these facilities and they just happened to do a test fire at 3:30 in the morning, that would probably require a change of underwear for me if I was watching this thing go up into the air, because it looks about as serious as anything you've seen in a movie, I'll tell you that. Okay, moving on. What else is going on here? More information coming out of the legislative branch. The U.S. House has now passed a resolution calling on the President Barack Obama to send lethal weapons to Ukraine. Surprise, surprise, no. Despite, obviously, the fragile truce in the eastern part of the country. This is a non-binding resolution, but it was approved by an overwhelming majority of 348-48. And it comes at a time as the White House is unwilling to make any radical moves on the Ukraine, at least on the surface, it seems, and following German Chancellor Angela Merkel's effort to persuade Obama to commit to Ukraine's truce plan during her February visit to the United States. But just kind of pointing out also that this situation in the Ukraine still going on. We still have a bunch of idiots in the legislature who want to send lethal weapons to Ukraine, despite the fact that there's a truce warning. And again, I don't think that we're going to do it right out in the open like that. I think we're going to do exactly what we did with Poland. We'll sneak them some weapons and then sneak them in as advisors. We had all those stories last week. And then, of course, you know, we had the story yesterday about Poland pulling up all of its reservists and as well as starting a conscription program there for men between the ages of 18 and 60. So, again, I just don't know. It looks like we might actually be moving towards war in this particular situation. Arizona, you guys have a problem right now. There's been a bill introduced to conceal police identities if they are involved in the use of force incidents, and it's meeting some public opposition right now, and that makes a lot of sense to me. But we're talking about State Bill 1445. What it aims to do is essentially keep the name or identity of a police officer completely hidden for 60 days to allow for some sort of cooling off period if one of these officers is involved with the use of force against, you know, a criminal or a non-criminal or whatever the case may be. So that's what they're trying to pass into law right now. Again, this is State Bill 1445. If you're in Arizona, I would probably hop on the horn or send some emails letting them know that you don't support that. I don't support that. Maybe you do. I think personally that in a world right now where we seem to be lacking a lot of transparency, you know, passing laws to continue to cover things up after incidents happen just seems like we're moving in the opposite direction of the way we should be going. Speaking of the way that we should be going, got to give some kudos to the state of New Jersey today. They have now become the first state to require local approval for law enforcement acquisition of military equipment. I don't know if you guys have this problem over in the UK, but all of our little bitty tiny municipal law enforcement agencies here, like your little county sheriffs, well, our government decided a few years ago to start giving them MRAPs and, you know, assault rifles and things like that. And it's been going on for a long, long time. But most of us realize that when you live in a little tiny town in Indiana of, you know, 4,500 people, probably don't really need an MRAP, right? Probably not really a good reason. And it kind of scares the heck out of people, really, to be perfectly honest. So most states are starting to fight back. And we like that. People are actually doing some things to try and limit the ability of these little tiny law enforcement agencies to acquire essentially equipment right off the battlefield in Afghanistan or whatever. But anyway, Republican Governor Chris Christie signed legislation making New Jersey the first state to require local Democratic approval before law enforcement agencies can receive surplus military equipment from the DOD. The legislation, signed during Sunshine Week, a national celebration of government transparency and accountability that ran from March 15th to the 21st, is a major victory for government transparency, democratic accountability, and the effort to demilitarize local police forces. In recent decades, New Jersey law enforcement agencies have acquired nearly $33 million worth of military equipment, including armored vehicles, grenade launchers, assault vehicles, and assault rifles. Under the new law, police departments must not only notify local governments of their intention to obtain said used military gear, but also receive their explicit approval before doing so. And while New Jersey is the first to enact democratic accountability and transparency mechanisms related to the DOD hand-me-down system to the state and local police, it is not alone among states grappling with the impact of police militarization. So Minnesota also just became another state considering a bill that would stop the militarization of police authorities. Let me see here, which I want to skip down. Okay, the bill introduced by Senator Brandon Peterson in Minnesota would prohibit state and local law enforcement from acquiring certain military equipment. And this bill obviously targeting this 1033, which is the name of the program under which the DOD is distributing all of these fantastically amazing weapons of war to local tiny communities. He goes on to say that no state or local unit of government or law enforcement agency may acquire military-grade weapons pursuant to Section 1033 of the NDAA for fiscal year. He says the bill SF-1358 defines military-grade weapons as military-equipped vehicles and aircraft weapons and or other objects designed primarily to have a military purpose or offensive capability and ammunition. So again, that's Minnesota basically throwing down the gauntlet there. In Montana, Representative Nicholas Schwaderer, which is a really unfortunate name, introduced House Bill 330 earlier this year, which would also place limits on the types of military equipment a local or state police department can purchase, audit the current inventory, and require oversight of allowed military-grade equipment. Schwaderer's bill prohibits police departments from accepting automatic weapons not generally recognized as suitable for law enforcement purposes, drones that are armored, weaponized, and or both of those things, grenades or similar explosives, including but not limited to flashbang grenades, stun grenades, and grenade launchers, and tanks or tank-like vehicles, among other things. It also prohibits police from accepting equipment paid for by the federal government, curtailing their ability to accept the free goods. New Hampshire, another state, doing the same exact thing, House Bill 407. New Hampshire, surprisingly, has received more than $6 million in military hardware, again, including all kinds of ridiculous things. And they also got several Bearcat-type armored personnel carriers, which were all nearly $300,000 apiece, and those figures actually aren't included in that initial $6 million figure. But anyway, it's really nice to see some of these states actually stepping up and saying, you know, this militarization of police needs to stop, and if we can't get the DOD to curtail it from his end, we're just going to stop it on our end. And so, again, 3-4 more states now stepping up saying, we're not going to support this. So if you're in one of those states, get involved. Call your people and say, hey, we don't want our local law enforcement officers driving around in MRAPs to, you know, collect overdue telephone book bills or whatever it is that they're doing, library fines or however it is that they're doing these things these days. So those are the good states. We got to go to a bad state now. Wisconsin, you guys have a problem very similar to Arizona. But Wisconsin cops now are going to be forcibly taking DNA for all misdemeanors. Yep. So this is a precedent-setting move beginning in April. Cops in Wisconsin will not only take DNA samples from felons, but will collect and record samples for all criminal misdemeanor convictions. So a local Fox affiliate carried the story, noting that the number of DNA samples collected each year is set to increase to an estimated 60,000 next year. Currently, about 10 to 12,000 samples a year are taken from felons. So, Wisconsin, it was nice to know you. I will never go to your state now. So that's what's going on in Wisconsin. Again, they're going to start pulling DNA from anybody who's been charged with a misdemeanor. And, of course, they're going to say, well, it's in effort to solve a bunch of crimes. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of backlogged information from crimes that need to be solved using DNA. But I don't know that every misdemeanor necessarily requires pulling your blood. But that's apparently what they're going to do in Wisconsin now. So, again, I'll never go there. man, we ran out of time here so quick. I apologize, guys. Let's see here. What do you bet amount of misdemeanors double next year? Yes, I guarantee you. That's exactly right, PRC. Misdemeanors in the state of Wisconsin set to double as well. They will just, with the stroke of a pen, create all kinds of new misdemeanor infractions, anything they can do. What I don't like about it is that it automatically creates a joinder between your physical self and the person that represents you on a piece of paper. Again, we'll talk more about this with Clint Richardson when he joins us on the show, but anything that they can do to combine your biometric, identity with the fake fraudulent you that exists on paper, they're going to try and do that. You know, that's kind of the whole goal here. So, there we go. Okay. Moving on here. I got to talk about this story because this video has now come out. Regarding the Secret Service SUV thing that happened last week. Remember the two drunk guys in the Secret Service were careening around Washington after leaving a party, and then they ran through an active crime scene. There was an active bomb investigation going on in D.C., drove literally through the tape, moved some barriers with their car, and then and apparently were just, you know, wasted out of their minds drunk. And I guess the video's come out now. So, again, man, the Secret Service, you just have to wonder who in the heck is running the show up there, because the House Oversight Committee finally saw this video, which apparently was not turned over to the new Secret Service Director, Joseph Clancy. He's been testifying. I think he's been in front of Congress like 4 times already, and basically just sitting there with his head down as they're yelling at him saying, why, you know, it's been 5 days and you didn't even know that this incident had happened. But again, now the video has come out, and it's just super, super weird to me. There was a couple of guys who were on guard duty, hanging out around the fence like you do, and another vehicle drove up and threw a box at them and told them that there was a bomb in it, right? So they cordoned off the area, as you do, And then lo and behold, these two other idiots from Secret Service, drunk, leaving a party, driving down the street, not paying attention to the fact that there were other officers there, driving through the tape, moving the barriers around so that they could drive through. Just absolutely crazy town. And they're not fired yet. They're on administrative leave. Nobody knows what's going on. But, you know, how protected does Mr. Obama feel right now? And is it all a show? I don't know. Hey, let's get into some other conspiratorial stuff right now. You guys will love this. The head florist from the White House has been let go. Take it away. I don't know where to go from here. Laura Dowling was her name. The only reason I brought this up is because when, like the head pastry chef left last year, and there was a huge, you know, publicly mourning the loss of this pastry chef. Huge big deal. Michelle Obama heaping praise on this person. Extraordinary legacy of progress in the world of pastries. I mean, okay. But then Laura Dowling, who'd been in the job since 2009, just left the other day. Escorted from the building, apparently, and nobody knows why. Nobody's saying anything. I don't know. What kind of conspiracy could be involved with a florist being let go? I don't know. I'm just pointing it out because I thought it was interesting. Let the conspiratorial juices go, ladies and gentlemen. Hang on 1 second. I got to reach now to the guest here. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about the economy right now because we don't know what's going on with that anyway. Dow down currently right now 160 points. We are at 17,850. S&P also down about 16 points, still well above the 2000 mark though. Let's see. The DAX also down today. Germany going down. The euro on the climb again. We are almost back to the 110 mark. We are at 1.0978. The US dollar dropping about the same amount as the euro's rise. Again, dropping right now, we're sitting pretty flat right at 97 right now. Let's see, silver above $17, $17.04. Gold also had a pretty big day here. We're almost back to the 1200 mark right now. We're at 1197 for gold. And let's see what oil is doing here for us. It looks like crude is on the rise by about 2% today. So we're looking at $48.53 for a barrel of crude right now. Bond markets right now betting on the Grexit. Apparently right now there's been a couple of taboos about Greece's future that the member of the Euro Club kind of broken this week, these two taboos. When the German finance minister all but invited Greece to return to the drachma, and the Dutch finance minister floated a temporary ban on Greeks taking money out of their country. So again, the bonds markets right now seem to be hedging towards a potential Greek exit. We're gonna have to keep more of a close eye on that. But again, I don't have a lot of time to get through all of these articles that I'm totally gonna miss on for today. Let's see here. There are some other really important economic stuff here, so I'm trying to blast through this stuff. The hryvnia will stay between 22 and 24 to the dollar if the IMF forms are implemented. So right now there is some question about whether the Ukraine hryvnia will remain pegged to the US dollar. And the IMF basically came out yesterday and said it will remain as long as IMF reforms are implemented in the Ukraine. So again, here we have the austerity packages coming down. And if not, they're potentially using this peg to the US dollar as leverage, saying that if you guys do not use these reforms that we want you guys to implement, we're just going to drop the peg, and then who knows how low the hryvnia will go. So again, you can see just more outside pressure being applied to the Ukraine right now, and this time in an economic sense. We've been talking quite a bit about the expansion of the SDR basket. Well, yesterday, the Chinese premier, his name is Li, on Monday asked the International Monetary Fund officially to include the Chinese currency into the SDR basket, endorsing the yuan as a global reserve currency alongside the dollar and the euro. Li met the IMF managing director Christine Lagarde in Beijing on Monday. So including the yuan in the SDR basket would allow the IMF to recognize the ascent of the world's second largest economy while aiding China's attempt to diminish the dollar's dominance in global trade and finance. In late 2015, the IMF will conduct its next twice-a-decade review of the basket of currencies its members can count toward their official reserves. And SDRs are an international foreign exchange reserve asset allocated to nations by the IMF. An SDR represents a claim to foreign currencies for which it may be exchanged in times of need. So although denominated in U.S. dollar, The nominal value of an SDR is derived from a basket of currencies with specifically a fixed amount of yen, dollars, British pounds, and euros, not currently including the renminbi. China would need to satisfy the Washington-based lender's economic benchmark and get the support of most of the other 187 member countries. So the last time the SDR review happened was in 2010, and the renminbi did meet the export criteria but was not meeting the freely usable criteria when it was assessed again at that time. Since then, there have been a number of developments in the renminbi's international use, and the upcoming review will take stock of these developments, according to IMF Chief Lagarde on Friday. So just spoiler alert, the yuan, again, going to be included in the SDR basket, and it probably won't take until the first of the year. I've read other articles saying that it'll probably be in October, which is unusual because they usually do wait until the first of the year. So we would expect it to expand in 2016 on the first of the year, but I think it's going to happen in September because I think something's going to happen. I'm sorry, it's going to happen in October because I think they're going to have to react to something that is set to happen in September. Don't, you know, that's just my own take on which way the wind is blowing here right now. Mentioned the other day that the United States kind of threw its support behind this new China-led bank. I want to kind of retract that a little bit because it isn't necessarily the United States, but it is the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which obviously has its center there in Washington, D.C. So again, International Monetary Fund and the World Bank both enthusiastically endorsing now China's new International Investment Development Bank, whatever you want to call it. So again, it's happening, you know. We're as much as we don't want it to happen, and as much as the United States is pretending that we're anti this whole Chinese investment bank, we're not. We're, you know, if the World Bank is getting involved with that, that is essentially the United States getting involved with that. Also, Japan came out. Now, again, they still have 5 days to make an actual decision, but they're not quite decided yet. The Japanese finance minister said just yesterday that it would be desired if the China-backed Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank could work with the Asian Development Bank in meeting growing demand for infrastructure financing in Asia, but they are still keeping it open. We're still not out of the woods yet on whether or not Japan is going to join in with this new Asian Industrial Investment Bank. Also, South Korea is kind of caught between a rock and a hard place right now because they've expressed a lot of interest in joining up with this Asian Investment Bank and being looked at, having their, you know, being having a finger pointed and shaken at them from the United States because obviously they're a huge ally of ours. So that would be them kind of giving us the old what have you. But anyway, that's what's going on in the economy. There's so much more stuff to cover right now. Beef just hit its highest level for the first time this year. $4 a pound. Unbelievable. Especially with the gas prices coming down. Anyway, we got to go to a 3-minute break, you guys. Stay right here. We are moving on, and Clint Richardson is going to be joining us in just a few seconds. And I know you guys are going to want to hear this, so keep it here. We'll be right back, guys. 3-minute break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. by clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for hanging out through that 3-minute break, and thank all of you guys who are in the chat room today. It's very nice to have this forum wide open here at Truth Frequency Radio. I want to just give you guys a heads up. It's time to get your water wingies on, those little inflatable wings, because we are jumping into the deep end of the pool today. Clint Richardson last time was on the show, was absolutely astounded. Everybody was astounded by the information that he brought to the table. It's very nice to have someone who can come in and speak really candidly and educated, or eruditously about, the situation that we find ourselves in. So it's in that vein that we wanted to bring him back again, trying to expose more of the puzzle pieces, as we're trying to figure out what exactly is going on around us. So for those of you guys who don't know Clint Richardson, I would highly recommend going to his website, which is thecorporationnation.com. He also has a blog, which you can find at realityblogger.wordpress.com. Both are fantastic sites that he keeps updated very, very consistently. He's also on the Republic Broadcasting Network. He does a show Monday through Friday from 7 until 9 p.m. here. I'm sorry, 6 till 8 p.m., excuse me, Central Time. He's also a primary researcher, a writer, obviously a radio personality, and a filmmaker, but he specializes in the audited annual financial statements, or CAFRs, of the corporate government, or as we're all coming to understand them now, as municipal corporations, and its ownership, stock investments, in the private industry. He currently resides in Utah, where he is close enough to throw a large rock at the giant NSA Center, which was recently built in his backyard, and he is currently in the process, as most of us are, of trying to sever his citizenship to the corporate municipal government. And so it is in that vein that we are very ecstatic to be welcoming Mr. Clint Richardson back to the program today. Clint, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Greetings.
Well, absolutely. And again, you know, this is one of those subjects that that I think people really need to really get their heads around, because we can sit here, we can talk about all of the what happens in terms of the 9/11s and the Oklahomas and all the what happens. But when you really come down to it, the question that I always have is, why did it happen? Why did it happen? And to me, this understanding of the corporate nature of the government, the fact that it's not really a government, but it is in fact a for-profit corporation, that to me is the why of all of this. That to me is the big head of the nail that everybody needs to hit. And last time you were on the show, Clint, we had a really interesting conversation because, again, you bring this kind of candid perspective to reality that a lot of people haven't gotten their minds around yet. We talked about the misnomer of the sovereign citizen and things like that. But I completely neglected 1,000% last time to bring up the CAFR issue. And I know that this is something that you have a lot of expertise in, and it relates to all of these issues. So I don't want to skip that today. I'd like to start right there, if that's okay with you. If you could talk to us a little bit about what a CAFR is and how you kind of became aware of them and decided that that was a point that you needed to really delve into. How did all that come about, and what are they specifically, sir?
Well, yeah, the CAFR is an interesting thing. It's the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, right? So, I mean, if you were to pick it apart and tell you exactly what it is, we know that every government is a corporation, right? Municipal corporations, districts, all those things. They're all corporations. States are also corporations. Federal government, corporation. Mm-hmm. Now, you can cherry pick and you say, well, it's not the same kind of corporation that Target is. Well, no, I didn't say it was. All I said is it is a corporation. It's called a body politic, a body corporate. That's all it is, right? So you can muddy the issue, but all you need to know is that it's a corporation, okay? Mm-hmm. All corporations are of government, the main corporation. So if I talk about Walmart, or if I talk about Target, or if I talk about Raytheon, they're all property of government. All patents are property of government. If you have a patent, if you have a copyright, if you have anything in the quote-unquote public domain, it's government. Hmm. It's under the name the government gave you, that vessel we were talking about, that ship.
Right.
Right? The citizen. Well, that's property of government. It's letters patent, words patent. That's a proper noun. Noun just means name. That's, it's been the same since the 5th century BC. Noun and name are the same thing. Okay. You have to put a name on everything in order to incorporate it into the system.
Ooh.
Name means incorporation. Your Christian name gets incorporated with the state surname. You become a corporation. When you marry, you become a corporation, a body corporate, two people into one, and it's a three-party contract with the state. Everything is corporate. That's the point. So there is no point in arguing whether it's a corporation. You can argue all you want what kind of corporation it is, but it's fiction. That's the point. It's all a lie. Right? And We support the lie. The money, it's a lie, it's debt. And that's very important, and we'll get into that. But, so all corporations have to have a financial report, an annual financial report. They have to report to government, just like you do, on, April 17th or whatever. You have to report, because you are also a corporation, you have to report to government.
That's right.
Right? You have to tell government if you've made any gains or profits. Now, folks, anytime you have a problem with the IRS, you have to realize that a gain or a profit is anything you make. Let me give you an example. Your wages are not a gain.
That's right.
Right? If you get a bonus, that would be a taxable thing. That would be something that you report as an income, as a gain. Income is just gain. So really, none of you owe anything to the tax. So you just have to look at the IRS code, which is a horror.
It is.
Now, just to be clear, again, we're talking about municipal corporations, specifically your school districts, your pension funds. All of these are government corporations, okay? They are. There's probably over, I'd say, 230,000 government corporations in the United States. Wow. That's Thanks. Towns, cities, boroughs, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Counties are also considered municipal corporations for the most part. So, what does that make us? If we are part or being controlled or administered through the municipal corporation, that makes us municeps.
Ooh, okay.
Municeps is a Latin term in the Roman law. It meant one eligible to office, right? We can get into office in a limited capacity. It's a provincial person, a countryman, the designation of one born in the provinces or in a city politically connected with Rome who had come to Rome and through a Roman citizen, yet was looked down upon as a provincial and not allowed to hold the higher offices. Well, we know that we can't be president. It's just, you know, that American dream is a big dream. That's all it is.
That's right.
In the provinces, the term seems to have been applied to the freemen of any city who were eligible to be municipal officers. That's what we can be. See, we can be the mayor. We can be all kinds of things, but we can't be president. We can't be governor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the higher offices. Those are what are called magistrates.
Oh, okay.
Magistrate is another word for God, by the way.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding. They are gods. That's why government and religion are the same thing. If you pledge your allegiance to government, you're pledging your allegiance to the magistrates, which are gods.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So now we understand that, and we understand that municipal corporations are merely administrative offices of the federal government. It's all federal. In other words, they're there in the states. They're renting the lands of the landholders, which are the people of the state. So all the governments are renting, literally, the lands of the landowners. All your homes and all your schools and everything are on the land of the landholders, which are the people of the state. The state and the people are the same thing. We are not those people. Okay, we are the foreigners that we talked about last show. We are an agency. Okay, we are not the people. We are peopled because the word people, when you don't capitalize it, like I can people a farm with cows or pigs. I can people a nation, which means I can, put a bunch of people in there to work for me. I can people things. But that's not the people, which is capitalized. That's the specific people who signed the Constitution. And their posterity, their genealogy, those are the people. All right. So, when we're talking about the CAFR, all corporations, including government corporations, have to file a CAFR. Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Now, what they show you is a dumbed-down version called the budget.
Ah, okay.
Ah, so, yeah. Now, what happens if I, to give you an example, what happens if I go to the IRS and I say, well, you know, IRS, I earned $100,000 this year, but I have $100,000 in my checking account, but I have a $300,000 mortgage, a $50,000 car loan, and I have this, and I have this debt. And I say, well, IRS, because I have a debt, I don't have a credit. My bank account doesn't count because my debt outweighs, my future debt outweighs my current assets.
Okay.
My liabilities, in other words,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what government does. We can't do that. The concept of a mortgage payment can only be stated as something current. But in government, everything is added all together. Okay. So when you get the budget report, your government can be holding billions of dollars, literally, LA, New York, some towns in Texas. They can literally be holding billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. But the way that they hide that from people is by investing it.
Oh, okay.
They don't have to show us investments when it comes to the budget report, because why? Well, we're not going to spend investments, right? We can only spend the cash on hand. So we put all our money in investments and we hide it from the people. We don't show that on our budget report. Budget report comes out, says, well, yes, we collected, $1 billion in taxation this year and we spent this much and the rest suddenly just magically disappeared. Well, where'd it go? It goes into what's called investment funds.
Oh, okay.
So let's see. People are familiar with the golf course, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So each city has a golf fund, a water fund, for municipal purposes. They have, all kinds of different funds, and those are investment funds. So the money goes in and it gets invested. Now again, those don't have to be shown to people. If you put the money, into a fund, let's just say it's all one big bank account, right? And say I go to the IRS and I say, well, I have $100,000 in my bank account, but I've put a partition in the bank account. It's all the single account, but like a hard drive, I put a partition on the drive and I've divided the drive into five different drives, right? Five different places I can store information.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the government does. It says, well, we have our general fund and anything in the general fund they're really accountable for. That can be spent on anything. So the first thing they do is get it out of the general fund. General is what they call us. Common, general, vulgar, massive illiterates. It's all the same thing. Goyim.
Useless goyim,
ears. Yeah, right. Yeah. Goyim, general, public, all the same word. So the public account The general account, the common account that goes towards taxpayer purposes and has no excuse not to, is the general fund. Everything else is a purposeful thing. So golf, anything they put in the golf fund has to go towards the golf course. Anything they put in this fund has to go to that. If they create a fund and they say it's the bridge fund, they're going to build a bridge in 10 years, the money has to go to that. Now, that doesn't mean they have to build a bridge. They can cancel the project, keep the money, transfer the money anywhere they want.
So it's a big card game or a big shell
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. Okay. Just think of it as, like I said, a hard drive is the easiest way to understand it. You can partition the drive, and each drive is a fund, basically, a fund of information. That's all money is. It's all digital information, right? It's just a matrix. Yep. So we transfer in and out, and that's how they have, you know, when you look at the CAFR, you can see all that. You can see, because the CAFR, the difference between the CAFR and what we see, which is the budget report, and keep in mind, Congress is also only using the budget. That's why there never seems to be any money. It's why they always have to raise taxes. I mean, think about it. If you could always hide any surplus that you have in investments, then you can say, well, look, we don't have any money, so we have to raise taxes. Every year, somehow government doesn't seem to have enough money.
Right.
The truth is, the reality is, I don't like the word truth anymore, the reality is that they are stowing that money away. They're investing it, and so it doesn't show up as something in the general common fund. It's not for us.
Wow.
Right? So they build up China. They build up Mexico. They build up Russia. They build up all the third world countries, start enslaving people in factories, right? That's how China was built up. You know, $10 trillion over to China to build the whole economy up.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right? China doesn't have any of our debt. We all those corporations over there are U.S. corporations just in China.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then you find out the government's the main stockholder in all these corporations, which explains a lot. When you look at a pension fund, people can pull up the CalPERS pension fund and go to what's called the asset holdings list or something like that. You can see every single stock that they own, and it's every single corporation in the world. And you combine that with all the different governments, and you have 230,000 governments, all with different investments into different things, and you see government owns it all, right? It's you know, you incorporate inside of, you become public, and then government takes all your stock. Why is that important? Well, let's take the Exxon Valdez or the most recent BP oil spill.
Okay.
How dangerous is it to have a bunch of government corporations who invest their money into either mutual funds or direct stock ownership of corporations? What comes with every stock? Can you think what comes with every stock?
Liability?
Yeah. No, actually, liability. The stockholders aren't really liable for what a corporation does. That's part of the magic. So liability. You know, the stockholders can sue the CEO of the corporation if their stock shares don't go up.
Okay.
The liability is on the CEO.
I meant more of from an investment standpoint of a liability, because right now, you know, obviously the government probably has a lot of investment into the shale industry, which is seemingly, you know, dissolving before our eyes. So I was thinking more of an economic liability, but if that wasn't the right answer.
They don't really care about money. See, this is the big fallacy, is that money is wealth. Money is not wealth. Stock is wealth. Real estate is wealth. There's a lot of things that are wealth. Gold, they have a lot of gold. In fact, the CAFR for the federal government and the Federal Reserve states very clearly 238, I think, million troy ounces of gold is what they have.
Right.
That's what it says right in there. And it gives the value, and they have a statutory price of the gold. Now, when the gold was pledged by the government to the Federal Reserve in exchange for the treasury to do all the stuff they're doing, the gold was pledged, and it was pledged at a set legal price. The legal price, statutory price, is $42.29.
Right.
Well, how do they get around that restriction? Well, they trade the paper. The paper is worth the going rate that they control. The price of gold is set every day, you fools, in the, in the, in the city of London.
Well, no, they stopped that all this week. Now all the city of London representatives moved to China. And so it's a whole new system run by the same exact people.
Yeah.
So totally, totally different. It's going to be totally different going on forward.
Certainly. Well, the U.S. Treasury has its offices there. Comptroller General has its offices there, or used to, I guess, in the city of London. And,
right.
And Rothschild Bank. And, you know, it's a combination of people get together and they set the price of gold.
Mm-hmm.
That's who it is. So you gotta realize that money is worthless. Money is debt. And as soon as you get that concept, you realize you can never pay your debt, first of all. That's why we're anyone under the Constitution is a debtor. Constitution is defined as a debt compact. Nothing else. That's all it is. That's what a constitution is. And it even says that in the Constitution. If you read it, it says all debts still exist. So, not as a debtor nation. Right?
Okay.
Okay. So, the CAFR is literally everything. So, the budget shows everything for 1 year. What happened in this specific year? The CAFR shows what happened since the inception of the government. All the money that it's saved in past years doesn't show up on the budget.
Okay.
All this stock investment, all the things that its governments are invested in is not part of the year in business. So they don't have to show that. They only show what's in the budget. They only show what happens during the year. And even that is very limited. So the budget is the same report as the CAFR, but it's dumbed down. It's a absolutely stupid version, completely dumbed down. All the assets are taken away and all the liabilities stay. So when you see the CAFR, you see all the math, right? You know, in math class, they say show your work, show your problem,
right.
Well, that's what they do in the CAFR. In the budget, you're getting the red. You're getting what the leftover remainder is. So we're all not seeing the math that's being done by the time we get the numbers. And we say, oh, darn it. Government didn't collect enough money. We have to pay them more, you know, more taxes, more. Right. But if you saw the CAFR, you'd see that all debts, every government I've ever looked at, every CAFR I've ever looked at, and boy, have I looked at a lot, can pay off their debt tomorrow and be completely out of debt.
Really?
There is no debt. Debt is based on debt. Money is debt.
That's true. That I definitely agree.
So there really is no debt. It's all a lie. So here's the kicker. And this is why I kind of have been like sort of, CAFR's not as important in my eyes anymore because it literally is based on something that doesn't exist. Now the tangible assets, absolutely. The fact that they own the corporations, absolutely important. And the question I asked earlier goes back to the fact that with every stock certificate that you own, that comes with a vote, a shareholder vote.
Right, okay.
So if you look at like Yahoo Finance, you pull up who the main investors in Yahoo, Bill Gates, and he might own 1 or 2%. Everybody thinks Bill Gates owns Microsoft. No, not at all. No CEO owns any corporation, with the exception of maybe Walmart. That's the family still owns 51%.
Right, right.
However, when government collectively pools all of its investments, right? So it has 1,000 shares here, 10,000 shares here, 1 million shares here worth $1 billion. CalPERS, for instance, has over $1 billion worth of Exxon stock, Bank of America stock, just in one pension fund. So all those votes that come with all of those stocks get pooled into a system where one private association takes all of the votes of government, or it's actually several private associations. Keep in mind the political parties are also private associations. They're not governmental. Right?
Okay.
So, and that's who's running government.
Right.
You've got government now with a few private associations, non-governmental, that are taking all those shareholder votes. Now, if you look at Microsoft, if you look at Apple, you'll see that it's called institutional holders, which are government and pension funds and mutual funds.
Okay.
Microsoft, last time I looked, was 73% owned by those institutions. Okay. So keep in mind the government invests in all the mutual funds. That's the main investor. So all that is government-owned stock as well. Okay. All those votes. So who do you think controls these mutual funds when they vote on behalf of government investments? The government would withdraw their investments from the company if it didn't vote the way government wanted it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So 73% or so, we'll say, we'll just say for argument's sake that 51% of that is owned by government.
Okay.
Well, guess what? That's enough to do anything you want. So what do the shareholders do? This is the kicker. Shareholders do not vote for the CEO, just to be clear. Bill Gates was not put there by government votes. What government does do is vote and replace and decide whether they're going to get raises or not the board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
The shareholders vote for who the board of directors are. The board of directors then elect and eliminate the CEO.
Right.
So what does that boil down to? That means government, as the owner and shareholder, proxy shareholder voter for all corporations, literally all corporations, just about, controls everything. Why was the Exxon spill not cleaned up? That would have cost the shareholders billions.
Right.
Why was the, why did the Fukushima happen? If you look at the pension funds, you're going to find out the government is the owner of each one of those damn, what do they call them? Prefix. The cities. The,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Government is the main holder of that corporation that runs that, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the company that had the actual.
Oh, TEPCO.
TEPCO. They, you look it up.
Yeah, I know
go
that.
Go look at CalPERS. You're going to find that our government is the big investor, the big owner of the stock. Guess who votes for what's going to happen to Fukushima? Guess who votes for what happens to the shores of Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Guess who you're talking about a system of almost complete control of all corporations. That is the importance of the CAFR. Now.
Well, it's almost like a backdoor, fascism, kinda, you know?
Absolutely. It's whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's communitarianism is kind of a combination of all of the isms, really. And so, when we take that into consideration, you understand the importance of it. Now, there's something that I've come to understand that is much more important. When you actually look, you find that almost the complete aspect of government investments is in such things, such schemes as mortgage-backed securities, as toxic debt. So, I'm looking at government CAFRs. I'm looking at what cities. I'm looking at what counties. I'm looking at what states. I'm looking at what they're allowed to invest in.
Mm-hmm.
It's all government securities. It's all debt.
Okay.
So,
I gotta interrupt you here real quick, Clint. I apologize. We've gotta go to a quick 3-minute break. I really appreciate you delving in. And I agree though that although the CAFR thing seems a bit dry on its face, what it does show is how they use this situation between the budget and the CAFR to create more leverage to pass more laws to, you know, increase the debt limit and all of this type of stuff. So we're getting into the Hegelian dialect type stuff, which I know is where we want to go. So ladies and gentlemen, stick with us through this 3-minute break. We're going to be right back. More Clint Richardson when we come back. TheCorporationNation.com is where you want to go. Keep it right here, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Aging for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Oh man, Clint, people are loving you in the chat room, brother. They're asking you to come to TFR and start doing a show over here, which at this point I would be totally in support of. I think that this information that you're bringing to the table today is, you know, it's one of those kind of scary types of topics. You know, you kind of get into this situation where you realize just how absolutely corrupt everything is, and it kind of puts you into this situation where you have to either understand it and move forward in truth, or you have to like kind of just acquiesce to it and continue to live in a lie. And so we commend you and all of the effort that you're putting in, and as well as trying to bring all this information to the people out there. Again, I want to recommend people do go to thecorporationnation.com and also therealityblogger.wordpress.com, both very, very good sites. Find out more about this topic that we're talking about. And okay, before the break, Clint, we were talking about the CAFRs, and essentially we had outlined the fact that the CAFRs really kind of show the long-term investment strategy that the municipal corporations are using, kind of what they're putting in the plus column. And I wanted to bring that back around to the fact that they're using that disparity between what they're showing us in the plus column and what they're actually showing us with the budget. They're using that as kind of this another facet of the Hegelian dialect, this problem, reaction, solution thing. I want to jump into that topic a little bit and just talk about this particular leverage that they create by doing this as being part of that dialect. But before the break, you were kind of touching on the fact that the things that they're putting into the plus columns in terms of assets are not really assets. Do you want to finish up that thought before we jump back into?
Well, yeah, it's very important to understand this, and especially because we're in a very strange time right now. There's a lot of people talking about biblical prophecy and stuff, and there's some very interesting, for instance. There's this guy, I can't remember his name, he's talking about the Jubilee, right? Yep. He's talking about the Shemitah, and he's saying that this, we are literally according to the Jewish calendar, which is a lunar calendar, they don't go by the solar calendar.
Right.
Right. So the, you know, he's saying that September of this year is, 7 years, 7 years, ago, we had another Jubilee or a Shemitah, and then we had 7 years before that was 2001. Every war that's ever been fought and won, every empire that's ever risen and fall happened on this cycle. That's right. That cycle that that stock analysts and economists have been trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my opinion, it's very much self-fulfilling prophecy. It's saying, well, let's take what's written in the Bible and let's fulfill it, right?
I agree with that. I just want to point out also that, you know, we're at the Red Pill Report, one of our main beliefs or one of my main beliefs is the power of intention, that you can create mm-hmm. circumstances just by intending for them to happen. And if you took a book like the Bible and filled it full of all kinds of, you know, scary type of things and then put it out for 2,000 years, could you in fact bring about those things? That's always a question I have to ask.
Well, see, and this is where it gets really interesting. And if you just go on, I highly recommend people do this, you know, I always tell people to look past the religiosity of people and look at the information that they're presenting. Mm-hmm. If you type in the words of Revelation, Revelation, excuse me, which just means a revealing, right?
Right.
Type in woman clothed with the sun. That is Revelation 12. Woman clothed with the sun. And the way the verse goes is that the woman clothed the sun in her hair and the moon at her feet and 12 crown of 12 stars at her head. Guess what? In the Bible, they say, how did they know or try to figure out the will of God? They looked to the heavens, to the stars. Mm-hmm. Well, hate to tell you folks this, but the only time that revelatory astrology actually ever happens, where the moon is at her feet, she's pregnant, with Jupiter, because Jupiter is in retrograde, so the star that looks like Jupiter, the king, the son of man, stays in her belly because it's in retrograde. It looks like it's standing still for a while. It happens for a nine-month gestation period in her belly. And, you know, I can't remember her name, the astrological figure that she is. It's talking about in Revelation. Mm-hmm. And the 12 stars repeat. It's the only time it ever happens because the planets are all lined up perfectly right in the constellation above her head. The moon's at her feet, sun's in her hair. You go further, you see the serpent, you see all the things in Revelation are actually happening in this like a 3-year period in 2017. Okay? Uh-huh. Now you can take that and you can say whatever you want. My opinion is they make things happen by the stars. That's how it goes for eons and eons and eons.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was one of the Rockefellers that said
it's all about astrology.
Yeah, they said what millionaires don't have astrologists, but billionaires do. I think that was a Rockefeller
sure,
quote.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So this year though is the 70th Jubilee, the 70th 70 or the 70th 49 or whatever it is. I can't remember how it works out. And literally, it's in the Bible. It's the one that's really talked about. That means, guess what? Jubilee means, you know, I want to start a city named Jubilee,
right?
Because it means forgiveness of all debts. And that's all kinds of debt. The slave owner releases the slave. The debtor, the creditor releases the debtor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is a very important notion in Judaism, right? So now we go back to the Kafir, and I realized this year that, and we knew it, I just didn't know the importance of it. Here's how it works, man. Government is the creditor and the debtor. One of the things about being not one of the common people is that you're no longer a debtor. You know, every debtor has to have a creditor. So the whole creditors and commerce thing, all of that, what you realize is that you can be a creditor and a debtor. And as soon as you figure that out, that's when you start having control.
Okay.
You can create your own fiction, your own person. You become that main part, that creditor. And that's what it's all about. That's what the Bible is about. It's about legitimacy, blood, etc. So, alright, anyway. I'm looking at the Kafirs. I'm looking at their debt. And I'm seeing that most of the things they call assets, the things that make up the end result, of either black or red, you know, $250 billion just in the CalPERS pension fund, and that's only the United States version. There's an international CalPERS as well that has probably trillions. You realize that a lot of that, and especially in the municipal corporations, which are your cities, counties, school districts, etc., mm-hmm. most of what they are allowed to invest in, it's not their choice, what they're allowed to invest in is debt securities, toxic debt, mortgage-backed securities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if the Jubilee happens, as this guy is portraying, and it does make sense, and all debts are forgiven. I was listening to an interview with some guy. He was a multi-billionaire, and he said he was at a college speaking, and people kept asking him the same question. They just couldn't get it through their heads. Why? What do you invest in? People want to know what you invest in. You know, Warren Buffett. What does Warren Buffett invest in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy was probably the first honest person I've ever heard, and he made everything clear to me. He said, I invest in debt. Debt is the most profitable thing you can invest in.
Hmm.
It's all going to go away. That's what he said. This multi-billionaire, he says, it's all, you know, I just got a $500 million loan. I didn't get it for any specific purpose, except the debt is going to go away. The dollar is going to crash. Everything's going to just basically vanish. So he invests in debt. What can you do with $500 million? You can buy all kinds of things and then suddenly have real wealth.
Right.
You can buy real land. You can do all kinds of things. And then all of a sudden the debt's forgiven. So here's this guy who was a multi-billionaire, one of the insiders saying, I don't remember his name, and he says, I only invest in debt. And he says it over and over, and he says, listen to what I'm saying, people. Quit asking me what stocks I'm investing in. Quit asking me, you know, these stupid questions. I only invest in debt because it's all going to crash. That's what he tells people.
And when was this disclosure?
I'll see if I can find it again and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Not that long ago.
Okay.
So that tells me, okay, why is government investing in debt? Because obviously government is their system,
mm-hmm.
right? It's their problem, it's their reaction, and it's their solution. So that makes a lot of sense. Why has government put so much money into all this debt? It's to prop up a false economy of debt and then forget. I mean, think about it, man. They built up China. They built up America on debt, on fiat currency that has no backing.
Right.
Well, we are the backing.
We are the backing. Right.
All of our property is a mortgage on it. So they've done the whole thing. All this wonderful creation we see, man's creation, is all based on debt. So what's the logical conclusion? They're going to forgive the debt, right?
Wow, okay.
Forgive themselves. They're the they're the banker. The United States is the banker. It's the creator of the money. It's the banker. The banks are members of its organization called the Federal Reserve, which is old. Just read the CAFR. You'll figure that out real quick.
Right.
Because by the way, if you want the audit of the Fed, you go to the CAFR. That's what a CAFR is. It's online, very easy to find. I've written about it. I've talked about it. It's right there. That is the audit. You're not going to get anything more than the CAFR. The whole thing with Ron Paul, sorry guys, Ron Paul is a shill. He is a liar. We tried to get him to talk about the CAFR. He wouldn't.
Really?
And he even told Walter Burian that he can't because it would be his job. It would be his career. Anybody's ever talked about the CAFR, the greatest golden secret in government is always kicked out. That's why you never hear about it.
Wow.
You have every once in a while, you had a guy in Oregon that stood up and said, I just looked at the CAFR and my God, look at all this money. And, right. He was gone. He's no longer in Congress. It's the unspeakable. They don't talk about it. But what they do talk about is the budget.
Right.
All the deliberations, everything they do is about the budget. Okay. So this goes into, like you said, problem, reaction, solution, Hegelian dialect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you really get to the point where you can see all of this, and the only way you can see it, of course, is outside of the box. Give up the system. Say the system is nothing but corruption. I want to look at it for what it is. I no longer have beliefs about it. I don't have a religious belief about it. I don't have patriotism. I'm not a part of it. I don't get benefits from it. Then all of a sudden you can see what it is. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this, so the way I compare, what I understand is, and this is a guy, you should write this guy's name down. You need to get him on your show.
Okay.
Patrick Wood. He is the author and his website is Technocracy Rising.
Okay.
Okay? You want to know where Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, Green, Recycling, all of that, problem reaction solution stuff comes from, it's this guy has it. He figured it out.
Okay.
It's all of Aldous Huxley's writings, everything that happened after the 1930s, including Roosevelt and his New Deal, et cetera, et cetera, was to go towards what we're seeing today, which is technocracy, which is energy exchange instead of money exchange. So my opinion is that the capitalist system, which was basically using us as the energy, capita means head, so capitalist. If you're on the capita list, the head list, that means you're being used as money.
Wow.
And that's what all of us are, right?
Yeah.
Just means head. So the energy trading, the carbon credits, and all this crap that we're seeing is part of the technocracy. This was thought of long ago. Plato talked about technocracy, for God's sake.
Hmm.
Technocracy Corporation was created in the 1930s, had about 500,000 people that were involved in it. All of Aldous Huxley's writings were about it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
It kind of died, but it didn't die. It just went into hiding because they realized they didn't have the technology to implement all of this stuff. Well, we're seeing all of technocracy now. We didn't know it. We say, oh, Agenda 21. Well, Agenda 21 is just technocracy. You gotta get that guy on. Technocracy Rising, get the book, because my God.
Patrick Wood, we're on it.
My God.
Okay.
That'll make all the Agenda 21 stuff clear to you where it comes from. So problem, reaction, solution. See, technocracy, the way Plato described technocracy is very interesting because he said, what it is it is a problem solution, paradigm that is presented to people. So you see, what our problem is that we never look at the cause of the problem.
Right.
We only are guided towards the solution, right? Problem, mm-hmm. reaction, solution. Our reaction is not to say, well, wait a minute, what's causing the problem? Our reaction is to solve the problem. What, think about it. That's all we do, man. We love our crosswords, our Sudoku, we gotta get to the end of a book. We have to figure out everything we can because we're so focused on the solution to the problem. And yet we don't say, well, why am I doing this stupid Sudoku? It's not really a problem.
Right.
There is no problem except unless I believe there's a problem. So let's take a rat. Okay. I put a rat in the cage. The rat is perfectly accepting of the cage, just as we are perfectly accepting of our own little matrix, right? Our own little bordered-in, open-air prison we call the United States for debtors.
Right.
Okay? We're just rats in a cage, so what do? I put a maze. I create a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though the problem is the cage. The problem is the cage and the controller of the cage, but okay. Let's put a maze down to keep the rat busy. Busyness. That's what corporations are, right? Busyness.
That's right.
That's why we all have jobs, to keep busy.
That's
so
right.
I put the maze, and the rat says, oh, wow, look, a maze. I better solve the maze. That's his reaction. So he goes through the maze, never once thinking to say, well, wait a minute. Some jerk just put a maze in front of me. I'm not going to go through it because guess what? The solution to the maze, and it puts you right back in the cage.
That's right.
So now let's consider in the matrix. Let's say you're plugged into the matrix. You're in a pod, a person that's created for you. You're soaking in the juices of dead clones, right? That's how they describe it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're feeding you to keep you alive. You're plugged in into a digital matrix, which is no different than the legal matrix. It's just a language. It's all words, just code, right? Mm-hmm. Code is words or numbers. And so what do? You try to, you know, do you think that, the main character ever gotten out of the matrix unless someone unplugged him?
No. Mm-mm.
Do you think there's a solution within the matrix that'll get you out of the matrix? No. You can solve problems within the matrix, but you're still in the matrix. The problem is the matrix, not the problems that are put in front of people. But technocracy is designed, Agenda 21 is designed, all of this green and everything else is designed as a problem solution model. We are so focused on every possible solution.
Mm-hmm.
That we never realize what the real problem is. That is what's happening. So the only solution to the matrix is to get out of the matrix. The only solution to the legal code is to get out of the legal code so it doesn't affect you anymore. The only solution to citizenship is to stop being a citizen.
That's
the only solution to anything. And this is interesting because when you look up the legal definition of solution, and I have to say this on my show every once in a while because people go like, you do a whole show and you never provide a solution. Once and for all, there is only one solution, ever in any case. The word solution means end of contract. That is the only solution.
Solution means end of contract?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. The end of a voluntary, consensual contract that you are in. Now, the problem with the word voluntary, everybody says, I want to be in a voluntary society. You're already in one.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, folks. Voluntary doesn't mean what you think it means. It only means what they define it as.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's only one solution. Look it up. Decipher the words and you figure out, oh, it's just telling me that the only solution to anything is to get out of the thing, to end the obligation, to end the contract. That is the only solution. So how do you end the tyranny of government? You get the hell out of it. How do you end? You get from under it, I should say. You stop having,
that's right.
You stop having it as your god, literally your magistrate. I mean, even the maxims of law tell you that when the foundation, when people no longer have faith in the magistrates, the foundation falls. Well, that's our problem. We have faith in the magistrates. It even says so on our debt. It says, in God we trust.
That's right.
That just means magistrate.
Wow, there's just so much hidden in this language, Clint. It's just absolutely crazy. Here's the question that I've got then. Since you're obviously way further along with understanding all of this, how do you live your life differently than other people? I mean, do you drive in the same way in terms of,
well,
with you? Or what's different about the way you operate?
I can't use myself as an example. I don't have a job. I haven't had a job in 6 years. People say, oh, my God, he's unemployed. Well, yes, I am, and I'm proud to say that. Because why? Well, employment means to be used for your labor and paid in debt.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm a sinner because I'm not employed. I'm not being used in some busyness that has no, every one of you that's working is working for debt. You're paid in debt.
That's right.
You believe it's wealth. It's not. It can be exchanged for wealth, which is what government does. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You get a paper that says you're the owner of a house. No, you're a tenant. You don't have blood. You're fiction. You're artificial. You're a straw man. You can't own anything. Everything that you own is property of the person that you operate. Okay, so you ask me, I'm not a good example because, like I said last time, I want to learn everything I possibly can before I make my step.
Okay,
and
I understand.
I am in the process right now. Right at this second of actually starting.
Okay.
Now I can use my friend as an example whose model I'm finally going to follow, which we talked about last show, which he got a declaratory judgment that shows exactly what he is, which is a private person, a private citizen, I should say. That means he's not a citizen of the U.S. government.
Is that the same as an American national though?
No.
Okay.
No,
just want to
not.
Divide that one. Okay.
You look up national. What does that mean? It means citizen of the United States.
Okay.
Okay, you don't want to be affiliated with the United States in any way. It's a corporation called Washington, D.C. If you are under that, you are not, quote-unquote, a free man, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, no taxes, no federal law, no license plates, no license. You see, someone that's free doesn't need permission.
Right.
Everything we do, we need permission. We can't hunt, we can't fish, we can't drive, we can't do anything. All of those are commercial activities. The only thing we can do is commercial activity because we are artificial persons that are in agency to government.
Right.
This guy has figured that out. He says, I'm no longer acting in agency. So what did he do? He sent letters to all the agencies. Said, do I have any obligations? No, no obligations. Now he has legal proof that he has no obligations to the United States. He gets a declaratory judgment that says, so he proves his genealogy, and this is very important, something I didn't mention last time, I think, is that he proved his genealogy to the Founding Fathers.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because the United States, the corporation, was created by the people for themselves, as you read the preamble, it's for themselves or ourselves and our posterity, which is our genealogy, our blood.
Okay.
So what he's done is he said, birthright, at birth, you put me in the birthing process, you convince my parents to abandon me at birth,
mm-hmm.
and make me one of your slaves. Citizen and slave are the same word. It's just voluntary servitude. Remember, they created had the 13th Amendment, which said no involuntary servitude or slavery, and then, which was the definition of voluntary servitude and slavery. Right. They had to do it in that order.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, all I can say is what I'm going to be doing is to follow in this guy's footsteps, because he is now involved in something that I can't talk about until it gets settled, which is to sue the state, because he operated that whole time an agency like we are doing, and he's suing for lots of money.
I would too.
More than he possibly manage.
Heck yeah.
Because now, you know, when a seaman is in the ocean, he doesn't get paid. When he docks the ship,
that's payday.
All of a sudden, yeah, he needs to get paid. And that's where he's at right now. So, what I'm going to do is follow exactly what he's done. I feel like I'm able to talk to the judge, for instance, you know, when I talk to a judge, I'm not going to call him by anything but his Christian name, which is his first name.
Right.
So that he knows I mean business, recognize his robe.
Right.
Right. So there's just certain things that you got to get under your belt, I think, before you try this, because they will test you. Because if you think about it this way, if you think these guys are there because most people are so uneducated and so enamored with the sin that they live in, which is to be artificial, basically, it's just unnatural, right? Not of God, whatever you want to call it. That's what government is for. It's to govern the masses, right? The masses of illiterates. So as soon as you show literacy, you understand the whole system, you understand that you have a power that you didn't know you had before, and you start claiming the power, because power doesn't exist unless you claim it.
Right.
Conspiracy doesn't exist unless you claim it, and the court acknowledges it. You know, so this is the point, after all these years of study, that I'm ready to actually take my step. You know, I've surveyed the land. I understand what the difference between the land and the sea. I'm actually ready to do it. So that's the point that I'm at right now. So, and that's kind of, you know, my show is sort of based on my own understanding and journey and his journey and the process that he's in now. He has no license plate, no licenses. He doesn't need any of that because he has a declaratory judgment from the court that says he is private. We all are public. Everything we do is public. The reason that you can't find anything on all these people that we're talking about, mm-hmm. because everything they do is in probate, which means private. Okay, the difference between public and private is everything. All law of the federal government and the state government is public. He is not public. He is private. So the important thing for me right now is to do a little research, to send out letters to the IRS, etc. That's the first step I'm going to take, which okay. is to ensure that I have no debts outstanding, no obligations whatsoever to any government agency. That's my first step. Once I have that, I have evidence that I have no debt obligations.
Uh-huh.
So I don't need to be a debtor anymore. I can become a creditor, right? That's when I'll go to court, and I'll say, you know, you have a choice, right? And it's not really a choice. You can either be one or the other. You can either be one of the people because you're one of the posterity of the original signers of the Constitution. And again, just go read the preamble, folks. It says very clearly what the intent of that people was. The ourselves, which is only the people who signed it, and our posterity. You look at posterity, it simply means genealogy.
Wow, Clint, I'm sorry, brother. I gotta cut you off, man. We are out of time. This is like the fastest hour in radio of the hours I get to spend with you. I'm sitting here trying to write down questions and they're just coming to my mind. We have so much more to talk about. I really appreciate you taking time out today, and I want to encourage people to go give us your radio show and time, will you please?
It's just republicbroadcasting.org, and I'm on Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 Eastern.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Please check him out. Also, go to thecorporationnation.com. Give him some support. What an amazing guy. Clint, you take care. Have a wonderful day. Ladies and gentlemen, I will see you guys in a couple of hours on Joe Joseph's show, but do not miss Kev Baker's show, Rebecca Roth tonight. Do not miss it. Everybody take care. I'll see you guys this afternoon. Oh, she's so...
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call in to your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.